This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Trump taking hydroxychloroquine. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka on this Tuesday, May 19. Thanks for joining us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
With the blessing of the White House physician, President Trump says he's taken an anti-malarial drug to prevent against COVID-19.
The president tells the World Health Organization that a current funding freeze will become permanent if the group doesn't quickly make improvements.
Big day for our 401k and other investments. Stocks rallied across the board on news of vaccine progress and states easing lockdowns.
And thanks to employees adapting to the work-from-home environment, companies are deciding whether a traditional headquarters is still necessary.
It might mean that we can, you know, move to a new city and just work remotely permanently, but it could also have a big impact on cities and office buildings and the owners of office buildings who might have less demand for their office space.
Conrad Putzier at the Wall Street Journal on whether your office will be there when you're cleared to return. President Trump is threatening to permanently end funding for the World Health Organization if the agency does not commit to improvements within 30 days. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The president released a letter to the WHO last evening saying his administration conducted an investigation that confirmed multiple failures in the early stages of the coronavirus outbreak. He said those failures have been extremely costly to the world, including consistently ignoring credible reports of the virus last December. The letter laid the blame squarely on China and the WHO for weeks of non-action. It referenced the organization accusing U.S. travel restrictions in late February of doing more harm than good. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. You'll recall Mr. Trump suspended contributions to the WHO last month, accusing it of promoting China's disinformation about the coronavirus outbreak. In his letter, the president said the only way forward for the body was if it could demonstrate independence from China. Investors are cheering hopeful developments of a potential coronavirus vaccine. The Dow Jones Industrial Average surged more than 900 points yesterday after the pharmaceutical company Moderna said the first human study induced immune responses in some of the healthy volunteers who were vaccinated. The results offer a positive sign about its capabilities to protect people and suggest Moderna is on track to meet its ambitious timetable for producing the shot for possible emergency use in the fall. Meanwhile, the results do not show whether it actually protects people who are exposed to the new coronavirus. White House Economic Director Larry Kudlow, meanwhile, is talking economic recovery.
There are little glimmers. I don't want to downplay the heartbreak because the numbers are not good for this quarter. Bad, bad pandemic contraction. But there are little glimmers. A lot of the unemployed are temporary.
Yesterday's stocks and the rally erased last week's losses. Asian shares extended gains today on the news and also on more countries easing lockdowns. President Trump says he's taking the anti-malarial drug hydroxychloroquine as a preventive measure against the new coronavirus. He told White House reporters yesterday that he's been taking it for a week and a half. Mr. Trump's interest in the drug dates to earlier this year, you'll recall, when he praised it as a possible treatment after some scientists and doctors theorized its anti-inflammatory properties could help patients with COVID-19. But the FDA warned last month that the drug is linked to serious heart problems and should only be used on hospitalized patients or as part of clinical trials.
Because I think it's good. I've heard a lot of good stories. And if it's not good, I'll tell you right, I'm not going to get hurt by it. It's been around for 40 years for malaria, for lupus, for other things. I take it.
The president's physician, Dr. Sean Conley, said he concluded that the potential benefit from treatment outweighed the relative risks. Mr. Trump said he also took one dose of the antibiotic azithromycin and is regularly taking zinc. It's 10 minutes now after the hour. On this morning,
America's First News.
Dell Technologies has special business savings right now to help you office everywhere and stay productive. Save up to 45% on desktops, laptops, and do-it-all servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10 and save on essential electronics. All with free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit Dell.com/small-business-deals.
Hey, thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday. No matter how well prepared we are, there won't immediately be enough coronavirus vaccine to immunize all Americans. Choices will have to be made about who goes to the front of the line. Who decides? Here's Elizabeth Weiss, reporter at USA Today. Elizabeth, what should we know?
So when we get a vaccine, and we don't know when that will be, and we'll probably have one or two hopefully cross the finish line relatively near to one another, but there's just no way we're going to have enough vaccine to vaccinate the entire world, much less the United States. I mean, 360 million doses all ready to go day one isn't going to happen. So the question is, it's going to come out in waves. Who goes first? I mean, everybody's very clear. Healthcare professionals who are working with COVID-19 patients, they're first. First responders, the ambulance drivers and 911 folks who are going to go get people in their homes and bring them in, okay, they're second. But then who comes next?
Mm. All right, so who makes that decision? You said usually the CDC.
Right, so since 1964, the CDC has had its advisory committee on immunization practices, and they are very careful, very thorough, very transparent. They have open meetings and they talk about, you know, they usually look at children's vaccines because that's what we mostly have at this point because we've gotten rid of major diseases. And they decide, looking at the science and looking at how the vaccine affects given population groups, they say, okay, for this one, you know, shingles goes to the elderly because they're the ones, shingles pops up usually when your immune system starts to slow down when you're in your late 60s. But measles, mumps, and rubella, you want to give it to babies. So they're the ones who typically would have made the decision. And in fact, they've already got a work group that's started in on this. On Friday, President Trump announced Operation Warp Speed, which it's a little amorphous at this point. We don't have a lot of details, but it will be this overarching entity that sits in the White House that is involved in vaccine creation, production, and dissemination. There have been some reports that that group was also going to help decide who gets vaccinated first. It's unclear if they would take this Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices advice or if they will have their own group. I mean, we just don't know.
We're speaking with Elizabeth Weiss, coronavirus reporter for USA Today. Her piece is called When a Coronavirus Vaccine is Developed, Who will be first in line to get it. I guess to a certain extent, and I think you pointed it out in your story, the vaccine itself might be a determining factor, right? In terms of who it works for best?
Exactly. And as I said, I mean, there's eight vaccine candidates around the world that are already being tested in humans. So we'll probably, and there's more than 100 that are still in the lab being tested on animals. So a lot of people are working on a lot of different vaccines. The thing is, some vaccines work differently than others. So some are more effective in the elderly. Some are more effective in children. We know that this vaccine is probably going to need two doses. You'll get one dose, and then you'll probably wait 2 or 3 months and get a second dose. So, you know, if the first vaccine across the finish line is one that works best in the elderly, then that's great. It's very clear. We vaccinate the elderly first. But then you have to start thinking like an epidemiologist. Do you want to vaccinate? Maybe you don't vaccinate the elderly because maybe the vaccine isn't as effective in older people because their immune systems aren't as robust. But maybe you vaccinate everybody who works with the elderly, people who work in senior citizen homes or drivers, because that way you've protected elderly folks from being exposed to the vaccine.
Wow.
And these are the kinds of questions that we have to think about now so that the day the vaccine vials show up at the loading dock, we know what arms they go in.
Thanks, Elizabeth. Elizabeth Weiss, reporter at USA Today. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Stocks rallied on Wall Street as investors became hopeful that more progress is being made in getting countries past the worst of the pandemic. The S&P 500 jumped 3.2% yesterday, erasing its losses from last week. Investors were also cheered by word from drug company Moderna. It had encouraging results in early testing of a coronavirus vaccine.
Number two.
President Trump is threatening to pull the U.S. out of the World Health Organization, accusing it of botching the global coronavirus response and of being a, quote, puppet of China. Trump also suspended U.S. funding to the U.N. body. China, meanwhile, announced a $2 billion outlay over 2 years to fight the pandemic. Last year, China donated about $86 million to the WHO.
Number three.
President Trump says he's taking a malaria drug to protect against the coronavirus, despite warnings from his own government that it should only be administered for COVID-19 in a hospital or research setting due to potentially fatal side effects. Trump told reporters he's been taking hydroxychloroquine and a zinc supplement daily for about a week and a half.
The frontline workers, many, many are taking it. I happen to be taking it.
The drug has the potential to cause significant side effects in some patients and has not been shown to combat coronavirus. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is facing growing political pressure as both Democrats and Republicans in Congress question the Trump administration's decision to fire State Department Inspector General Steve Linnick, who was conducting inquiries concerning Pompeo. The independent department watchdog was investigating allegations Pompeo used government resources for personal tasks, as well as complaints about his decision last year to bypass Congress in approving emergency arms sales to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. And a federal appeals court has dealt another blow to the NCAA's efforts to keep tight limits on compensating student athletes, ruling that the organization's restrictions violate federal antitrust law. Any immediate impact of the ruling may be short-lived because the NCAA, facing pressure from states, Congress, and athletes, has committed to starting broader changes on rules on athletic compensation starting in 2021, allowing players to sign endorsement deals for the first time.
All right. Thank you, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Thanks for being with us. Entrepreneurial-minded individuals are hoping to turn a buck from the crush in oil prices. With demand way down and companies running out of places to put crude, these people are floating schemes to sock it away until prices rebound wherever they can, in places like caves, abandoned rock mines, and even giant pools. It's a story by Rebecca Elliott, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Rebecca, take us through this.
One of the kind of odd repercussions of everybody hunkering down due to the coronavirus is that oil demand, you know, people's demand for jet fuel and gasoline has plummeted, and so have prices. And so we've gotten into this situation where oil is generally worth less today than it is several months in the future. And so people are coming up with some pretty creative, in some cases zany, ideas for storing oil and, you know, socking it away for a few months.
How about the guy who you opened the story with? He just like rented these metal tanks and what? Just went to oil companies and said, I have a place for you to put your oil. Pay me.
Yeah, so one of the people I spoke to is based in Texas and came up with this plan to rent a few hundred metal tanks, kind of about the size of a school bus, and park them on land, truck in oil, and hold it there for a couple months until he could offload it, hopefully making a profit, because as I mentioned, you know, right now the market is such that, oil is worth more later than it is right now.
That's really something. We're speaking with Rebecca Elliott, oil and gas reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Her piece is called Wanted, Somewhere, Anywhere to Store Lots of Cheap Oil. I found it fascinating, too, in your story when you said that even water companies are expanding so they can store oil. How does that work?
If you've ever driven around an oil field, you'll see these large containers. They really look like giant swimming pools, and they're typically used to hold water that's needed in the fracking process. And some people have figured out how to kind of tweak those containers, add different kinds of liners so that they can hold crude oil. And that's another place that people are looking to put oil and, take advantage of the market.
You referenced, too, some logistical and regulatory snags that some of these folks have come up with during their effort to make a buck here. Explain some of that.
Yeah, you know, it turns out it's not so easy to just go out and fill whatever container you have with oil. Probably a good thing. And so there's some places that just, you know, frankly, aren't suited to hold oil and, contain it without spills or potential damage to water underneath the ground. And, you know, there's also just, there's some people who regularly trade oil are much better positioned generally to take advantage of a market like this.
Thanks, Rebecca. Rebecca Elliott, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Everything begins with an idea, but how do you bring it to life? If your idea requires graphic design, copywriting, web programming, or some other skill, how do you locate that help? For the talent you need at a price you can afford, the answer is Fiverr. Fiverr connects you to a network of trusted freelance talent that's worked on some of the most influential brands in the world. Fiverr talents offer hundreds of digital services that you can search by service, deadline, price, reviews, and more. With Fiverr, there are no unknowns. You'll know exactly what you're paying for upfront with no negotiation. And Fiverr's talents are proven to ensure you get the expertise you need to bring your idea to life. And when you give Fiverr a try now, you'll save. Check out Fiverr.com today and use my code Gordon to receive 10% off your first order. It's so easy. Find all the digital services you need in one place at Fiverr.com, code Gordon. Again, that's Fiverr.com and the code Gordon. Try Fiverr today.
The top national stories with the context to make sense of it all. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Tuesday, May 19th. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. President Trump says he's taking hydroxychloroquine as a preventive against COVID-19. White House threatens to permanently withhold funding to the World Health Organization. Stocks rally on word of coronavirus vaccine progress. Uber cuts 3,000 jobs and is closing three dozen offices. NFL players can access team facilities today if they're getting medical treatment or doing rehab. Krispy Kreme offering a free box of donuts to 2020 graduates today. And the hairstylist in Colorado who received an enormous tip. That story in 20 minutes. This portion of the program is brought to you by Dell. Save up to 45% on Dell business computers with Intel Core processors. Plus get free shipping. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor. Someday, the coronavirus pandemic will release its grip on our lives and we will return to the workplace. The question is, will there be an office to go back to when this is all over? Conrad Putzier, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, says the changes the business world is considering offer a radical rethinking of a place that is central to corporate life. Conrad, what have you found?
So I think what we basically found is that a lot of companies have decided that this work from home experiment is going better than they expected, that this is something that they want to do permanently. So they don't just want to do this during the pandemic. Even if and when this all is over and everything goes back to normal, they basically still want to give their employees the option to work remotely. And that could potentially have huge ramifications. I mean, it could have ramifications for all of us because it might mean that we can, you know, move to a new city and just work remotely permanently. But it could also have a big impact on cities and office buildings and the owners of office buildings who might have less demand for their office space.
You get the sense that big tech firms are leading the way right now with this trend?
Yeah, and it's funny because tech firms were kind of the leading the charge for these hip urban offices, right? If you think about these super amenitized offices where you have ping pong tables and a bar and couches, those are all tech companies, and they were leading the urban revival of the past decade, you know, building and buying gigantic offices in the middle of New York and San Francisco. And now these companies are at the forefront of basically something very different, where they're saying, you know, to be clear, they all still want to have their offices and they still say offices are important. But they also say, you know, this is actually going well. We might let people just work from home on some days or even on every day.
Twitter pretty much has gone that route, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and Twitter is an interesting case because they basically decided years ago that they were going to offer more employees the chance to work remotely, and then they were gradually sort of getting there, and then this pandemic happened, and they realized, you know what, we can just accelerate this whole trend, and we can just tell everyone that they can work remotely permanently if they want to, and that's basically what they said last week. Jack Dorsey, the chief executive, sent out an email basically saying all their staff you know, if they don't want to, they don't have to come back to the office.
Boy. And if you've been commuting, that's an immediate raise all of a sudden, right? That's,
yeah, exactly.
Money back in your pocket.
Exactly.
Jeez. Yeah. What does this mean for commercial real estate? There could be some big changes here.
Yeah. So I think that's the big open question. And it's too early to say with any certainty, right? Because there's two competing trends happening here. On the one hand, a lot of companies are saying we want to have fewer employees in our office. We want to space out desks more. To create social distancing. So you could argue that that might actually increase demand for space, right? Because if you need more space per employee, you have to lease more space. On the flip side, everyone's basically saying we want to have more people work from home, and that would decrease demand for office space, you'd think. So it's kind of too early to tell which of those two factors will win out. But the general consensus is that most companies do think they'll need less real estate in the future. And that could be a huge issue for office owners, particularly in the big cities. You know, for the past couple of years, we've had all these big institutional investors spend billions and billions of dollars building and buying office buildings. And they're all betting that demand for this space will continue to increase. And what if it doesn't? It could create some serious issues.
Yeah. Jeez. We're speaking with Conrad Putzier, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called "When It's Time to Go Back to the Office, Will It Still Be There?" You said, too, there are some folks who say there's no substitute for having all employees under one roof. I don't know what collaboration or chemistry, things along those lines. So I guess it won't completely go away.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, to be perfectly clear, right, this always gets simplified as, oh, is the office over? No one's saying the office is over, and it clearly isn't. And even the companies that say we want to do more remote working, they also say we still think the office is really important for us and it will be continue to be an important part of what we do. And there are just a bunch of things you need the office for. I mean, if you're a young employee, you want to build a network, you want to build a name for yourself in the company, it's very difficult to do that just via video chat. You want to be in the office. You want to walk by your boss's desk. You want to be seen. There's a bunch of jobs that really depend on sort of the collaboration, creative jobs. There's jobs that depend on really, really fast internet, which often isn't available at home, thinking of, you know, high-frequency stock traders.
Oh, yeah.
So there are a bunch of reasons why the office will continue to be important.
It's Conrad. Conrad Putzier, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday. It's time now for the mic drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we've heard New Jersey's governor call those who can't keep their social distance knuckleheads in recent weeks. And now we can add a pair of melonheads to the list of people not exemplifying themselves as good citizens during the pandemic. Police in Virginia posted posted photos of two people, both wearing hollowed-out watermelons on their heads, allegedly stealing from a Sheetz convenience store. Despite the elaborate disguises, one of the two suspects, a 20-year-old, was arrested on Friday and charged with larceny, among other things. Police are still looking for the second suspect.
Huh.
So they're both, the picture looks like they're kind of standing in line almost, like they walk in. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, there's video, surveillance video.
You can't really see the full picture of it, but you see kind of a still picture of them almost kind of standing in line, you know, with the melons on their heads. Uh-huh. And I guess they wound up, you know, stealing some money. But I mean, in this era where masks are prevalent,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we all have them.
Yeah.
Why they chose melons and why they took the time to carve out melons to do this and make themselves even more conspicuous, we'll never know.
Because on a serious note, there are concerns that wearing a mask
mm-hmm.
could make it difficult for, say, a store clerk to determine whether somebody's wearing a mask
right.
because of the coronavirus or is interested in stealing and
yes. now, I mean,
staying anonymous yeah. in front of a camera.
Yeah, I mean, I guess these do cover their entire head, right? It's not just their face, so
okay.
I guess they are somewhat less identifiable that way. But again, you know, not exactly something you're going to do if you don't want to draw attention to yourself.
Yeah.
Normally, when you do something like this, you don't want to draw outsized attention to yourself.
Right. You have experience in reporting these stories. I'm just curious.
yeah.
When you're going to use a watermelon
right.
as a head or face covering, do you dry it out? You obviously scoop
yes.
out the inside.
Yeah.
Do you like mat it with a paper towel of some kind?
I mean,
do you use a hair dryer and dry it out? Or do you just let it like drip down your head and face?
I certainly would. If it was me,
dry it out.
I certainly would. I
yeah.
would think you would want to do that.
You cut out eye holes and stuff?
Yeah,
there
were eye holes
yeah.
cut out. They did
That's
manage
clever.
To at least figure that one
well,
out.
It required some creativity and
yeah.
measuring, I presume, right?
Yeah, yes. And it lasted, what, a couple days before they were
pinged
out by the cops.
Dear.
And we know, Gordon, that dress codes for work have been severely relaxed during the pandemic, but in most cases, you still have to dress. Even that's too much for some people, however, as at least one nudist organization is seeing a surge in membership since staying home restrictions were put in place. British Naturism, a group that promotes living everyday life without clothing, gained 210 members over the past 2 months, a 100% increase in membership. Spokesperson told the Daily Mail that nude sunbathing seems to be the new national pastime. They also credit all the social isolation for the uptick in disrobing, with so many more people able to experience the freedom of being without clothes while home alone. If you too have been bitten by the nudism bug, the organization has a host of online events available, including naked yoga, virtual pub meetups, and a nude coffee morning gathering.
Oh.
Yes.
I didn't realize there were so many opportunities to be nude with others.
I mean, you know, the possibilities are endless. Really, anything that you would normally do, you can do, I
yeah.
suppose, while being nude. So,
right.
And people like to do it when they are nude. They want to do these activities together.
Yeah. This is interesting, though. I mean, do you tend to do this when you're alone at home? Like if you live alone? Because this
right.
is not something you necessarily spring on the family.
Right.
Hey, surprise everybody. Look at the new organization I've joined.
Yes.
Right. Dad, could you put a robe
yes.
on, please?
Well, could you take up another hobby?
Yeah.
It would be nice.
Wow. I tell you what, though, the membership coordinator
mm-hmm.
deserves an immediate raise.
100%
improvement in membership.
If they make commission, this is a good month for them.
A person in any other organization gets a promotion and a raise for that kind of jump. Thanks, Mike. Even in tough times, you want to try to look your best, even if it's just from the waist up for those video chats. So when it comes to your facial hair, Harry's has you covered, bringing you incredibly high-quality blades at factory direct prices, just $2 per blade. Now, when it comes to my facial hair, I'm typically a goatee guy, but lately I've been using these times of home quarantine to experiment with a full beard. This has allowed the precision trimmer blade on my Harry's razor to take center stage. I use it to make sure my new beard is looking its best. Now, you can keep your face looking smooth, too, or your beard looking clean with a Harry's trial set delivered right to your doorstep. Just go to harrys.com/Gordon to order yours. And get this, to help support those who need it the most right now, Harry's is donating $1 million worth of shaving supplies to hospitals across the U.S. so you can feel good about looking good. Listeners of our show can redeem their Harry's trial set at harrys.com/Gordon. You'll get a weighted ergonomic handle for a firm grip, a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel with aloe to keep your skin hydrated, and a travel blade cover to keep your razor dry and easy to grab on the go. Go to harrys.com/Gordon to start shaving better today. Thanks for being with us. Large levels of jobless claims will likely drive more homeowners to seek mortgage relief in the weeks ahead. A new law tied to the pandemic provides borrowers who have home loans the right to request a temporary suspension of payments on federally backed mortgages. Forbearance is a temporary fix consumers can see their payments paused for up to 6 months initially and possibly another 6 months. In March, lenders might have initially offered to let homeowners who made such requests to postpone 90 days of mortgage payments through a forbearance agreement. Many of those, though, will likely expire come late June or July. The debt isn't forgiven, as you may know, and the regular interest keeps building. However, no additional fees can be charged. In addition, a new consumer relief guide has been released. The Detroit Free Press put together some of the points in it. In most cases, you should receive multiple options for repaying the monthly payments not made during the forbearance period. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
By this Memorial Day weekend, every state will have begun lifting measures enacted weeks ago to curb the spread of coronavirus. Many governors have already pushed into a second phase of reopening, with some states now allowing restaurants, retailers, and personal service shops to reopen their doors. In California, Governor Gavin Newsom has given the go-ahead for professional sports teams to soon play without spectators.
Protecting not only the players, but more broadly, their support staff. Again, we're not talking about fans in this respect.
Number two.
One of the biggest questions facing students and educators is how and when they'll get back in the classroom. Notre Dame has made one of the first major announcements, saying it will bring all students back to its Indiana campus to start the next academic year 2 weeks early in mid-August. And will finish the semester before the Thanksgiving break. Then the students won't return to campus until January.
Number three.
Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin will likely come under tough questioning from senators today about a small business lending program included in the government's $2 trillion relief package. Lawmakers from both parties have criticized the payroll protection program, which initially provided $349 billion in forgivable loans to small companies, but has been plagued by a host of problems. Mnuchin and Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell will testify before the Senate Banking Committee. The gunman who killed three sailors at a military base in Florida last year communicated with al-Qaeda operatives about planning the tactics in the months leading up to the attack, FBI Director Christopher Wray.
The evidence we've been able to develop from the killer's devices shows that the Pensacola attack was actually the brutal culmination of years of planning and preparation by a longtime AQAP associate.
Law enforcement officials discovered contacts between the shooter and operatives of al-Qaeda after FBI technicians succeeded in breaking into two cell phones that had previously been locked. Women are taking baby steps in the corporate boardroom. The number of businesses with female leaders that made this year's ranking of the top 500 U.S. companies by revenue climbed to 37 this year from 33 last year. Women leaders account for 7.4% of Fortune 500 companies. The top 10 included Walmart, Amazon, ExxonMobil, Apple, CVS Health, Berkshire Hathaway, United Health Group, McKesson, AT&T, and AmerisourceBergen.
Thank you, Jen. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour.
Dell Technologies has special business savings right now to help you office everywhere and stay productive. Save up to 45% on desktops, laptops, and do-it-all servers with Intel Core processors. Upgrade to new modern devices with Windows 10 and save on essential electronics. All with free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit Dell.com/small-business-deals.
Thanks for being with us. An anonymous barbershop patron in Denver recently left a whopping $2,500 tip for his hairstylist, and that was in addition to the $3,300 he gave to the shop's other employees. Alicia Novotny, the stylist, told the Denver Post she wasn't even planning on working that day, but picked up a shift on the first day the salon was allowed to reopen. The anonymous customer came in at the end of her shift at Floyd's 99 Barbershop at the University of Denver. As her client got up to pay at the front desk, Ms. Novotny says he turned back toward her and assured her, quote, "It's not a mistake." She later found out he was referring to a $2,500 tip he left on his $27 haircut. Her co-workers were also given generous tips, $1,000 for the general manager, $500 for the receptionist, and another $1,800 to be divided among the 18 barbers and stylists. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.